Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. This is Debbie Verney.
And good morning. This is J. Marie Schaefer.
And we're two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm. We're going to be here for the next hour to answer your questions on estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning. And we would love for you to be our first caller at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. And give us a call. And I guess from what Ben was saying, it's been a plethora of calls on the prior Saturday. So if you want to get in and get your questions answered, you should probably get on the phone and give us a call. So how are you doing this morning, J. Marie?
I am good. I think we have a little contest here. I think we need to see if the girls get more calls than the boys. Because usually we do.
Oh, yes. Usually we do. I think that that's a great contest.
I like it. Us girls are throwing down the gauntlet.
Yeah, I like that you're in the best.
That's right. Ben has his pink headphones. He's in with us.
That's right. I am. I'm representing today.
And we were talking about that before we got on the radio, that October is actually Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So there's a lot of walks. I know the big walk for Albany is this weekend, and they're doing it virtually. Mm-hmm. And there's a big walk this weekend for Alzheimer's Association, and they're all virtual. One of my friends is actually in a walk in Massachusetts, again, virtual this morning for brain cancer. So people are getting out and walking, and I know a lot of the charities are a little bit low on funds because they haven't been able to have fundraisers or anything.
That's true, but for these virtual walks, I mean, you can get people to donate, and then you can still go out and take your walk someplace that you choose, right? It's nice to still get out so you don't have to, like, stay and watch people walk virtually.
Well, that's what my one of my neighbors for the breast cancer walk, she sent out an email and she said, you know, I'm still going to walk. So if you see me walking by your house in my pink sweatshirt, I'm doing my walk for breast cancer. And I just thought that was awesome. She's like, you can donate to me. You'll see me. I'll wave as I'm walking by, but I can't stop to chat. I'm doing my walk.
I was just going to say, she probably should have just said, throw money at me as I walk by. I'll socially distance and pick it up. So just toss it to me as I'm going.
There you go, definitely. Just stand there and throw money on the sidewalk as she goes by.
That's
I think
right.
That's a great idea.
That's a great walk. Great virtual walk.
Okay, so we would love for you to be our first caller again, 518-476-5900. Also, it's webinar week.
I can't believe it's webinar week already. Time is flying by.
And people are like, what is a webinar week?
So webinar week is a week where we have webinars every day at 2:00. Instead of our live seminars, this has become a regular of ours now. And you can, you know, watch us on Zoom. You get to ask questions, and we talk about all the same topics we do at our live seminars. So this week it's Monday. We have Wills versus Trust at 2:00. That's a popular one. Tuesday we have Medicaid and Estate Planning Myths. That's also a good one to go to. Aging in Place is on Wednesday. Medicare versus Medicaid is on Thursday. And on Friday, it's What to Do When a Loved One Dies. And again, they're all at 2:00. And you can sign up for them at our website at www.herzoglaw.com.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity. And I tell a lot of people, because they're like, well, 2:00 PM. And I'm like, well, they're pre-recorded. So if you want to go to our website, let's just say you're not available at 2:00 anytime this week. And the majority of these are all pre-recorded. So you can go onto our website, again, at www.herzoglaw.com, go to our blog, and there's links there to the pre-recorded ones. So you can plan when you want to watch it, right? Just like Netflix, right? It's there. You can get your popcorn. You can get your soda. You can sit, and you can put it on pause.
That's right. Hey, but there's no commercials, so that's good.
That's right? True. There is no commercials. It's commercial free.
That's right.
But we have webinar week every month, and we also have webinar Wednesday every Wednesday. And that webinar Wednesday, we have a webinar at 2 in the morning. Okay, not 2 in the morning, 10 in the morning.
I could watch that one. I'm up about 2 o'clock.
You could.
So I'd be all right with that.
There you go. It's at 10 in the morning and then 2 in the afternoon. So there's 2 of them on Wednesdays when it's not webinar week.
That's right. Great opportunity to ask questions, because sometimes you want to just learn a little bit more about this before you come into a consult, and this is a great opportunity to just get some information. A lot of clients who come in say they watch the webinar first, so they feel like they know a little bit about what's going on before they come in.
And what I wanted to talk about a little bit today, because we've seen a lot of it here lately, and Jay Marie does the majority of them, are guardianship proceedings. So, Jay Marie, why would someone have to do a guardianship proceeding?
We are busy with those. So a guardianship proceeding, not something anyone does willingly, right? A guardianship proceeding happens when someone doesn't prepare properly. So if someone becomes incapacitated or sick and they don't have a healthcare proxy or a power of attorney, that means there's no one legally who can take care of things for them. So you have to go to court and ask to have a guardian appointed for you. Sounds kind of simple, but it's really more complicated than that, because you have to go to court. It's a court proceeding. There's a hearing. You know, it's a really lengthy process and expensive process. And just to go back to the way you can avoid it is by having powers of attorney and healthcare proxies. So there's been a lot of cases lately, I think because people were in nursing homes and family couldn't visit them. And so they couldn't they couldn't manage things because they didn't have a power of attorney. And we have to do a guardian proceeding for them. And we're doing them now by Zoom. So if you're, but yesterday I had one where the client was in the nursing home and one of the social workers had to use her phone because the nursing home didn't have a computer with a video, I guess. And she had him on phone, you know, to the court so the judge could see him and talk to him. And
yeah,
we were on, it's not easy. We were all on video. Also, it's harder to do it that way. It actually took 2 or 3 times to try and get it scheduled. So this was a long period of time where his granddaughter couldn't do anything for him. The first time it got delayed because the nursing home had the time wrong and they brought him out to a doctor's appointment when we were supposed to be having our hearing.
No.
So that delayed it. And this was a problem because if you don't have that power of attorney, she couldn't pay his bills.
Right.
And she was actually paying his bills out of her own money.
That makes it hard too, yeah.
Yeah, which is really hard. I mean, so she was paying his rent. She was making sure his car insurance was paid. And not everyone could just pay that out of your own money, right?
No. Mm-mm. So as far as powers of attorney go, it's interesting that I've had a lot of my clients that have, you know, done their documents 10, 15 years ago that are now coming in, and they're changing their health care proxy and power of attorney because they named each other first. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
So they came in 10, 15 years ago. They said, I said, who do you want to appoint as your healthcare proxy and power of attorney? And they said, well, we want each other first, and then we named the kids,
mm-hmm.
which worked out fine 10 or 15 years ago. But now they're in their 80s, right? They're in their 80s, some are in their 90s, and mm-hmm. they're looking at their spouse and saying, you know, I don't know that my spouse could make those decisions for me. And so a lot of people are changing their powers of attorney, so it is a child or the spouse,
mm-hmm.
right? So the child or the spouse could act, or moving the children up. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's very important to do. It also just reminds me, it's a case that, you know, that we had, that you have an alternate, because we had a guardianship case where the spouse was appointed the power of attorney, but there was no backup. And the spouse was not able to handle things anymore. So in that case, there was no one left. Even though that person had a power of attorney, which was a good thing,
because there was no backup, we still had to go to court and have a guardianship to get the granddaughter appointed. So you need to make sure you have backups and, you know, that generally that they're younger than you, right? Right. If you can. Like the next generation down, we try and ask people to think. I mean, usually it's going to be your kids, but if you don't have kids, maybe your nieces or nephews. You don't want someone the same age as you, because then you're both in the nursing home together. Who's taking care of who, right?
Exactly. And another thing that comes up, too, with powers of attorney is a lot of people have the old forms. They have the forms that were done before 2009. And even a lot of our clients still have the simple three-page form, and we're getting a lot of pushback from a lot of the financial institutions that are like, no, you have to have the new form. And that's why we always tell our clients they should come in every 5 years and look at their documents, or give us a call every 5 years to make sure nothing has changed, that their documents still work for them.
Right, the old power of attorney form may not have had the gifting powers that you
right.
need. So even though it would work for taking care of things at the bank, it wouldn't work if you wanted to do some planning, you know, set up a trust. That's considered a gift. You would need a newer power of attorney that has those expanded powers to do that. So we're happy to look at your old powers of attorney and see if they are good and if you need a new one.
Yeah, I mean, it just takes a few minutes to go over documents.
Another problem we have is that banks don't like to take, some of them don't like to take the power of attorney, even though they're required to. And yesterday, this client came in and they had a form specifically for that bank that they wanted, mm-hmm. they needed us to notarize, even though they already had a power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
So there's many times where we are calling banks and telling them, no, this is the right form. You need to accept this. I think in this case, the client just gave in and said, all right, I'll just do your form. It's easier.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult to make the right decision. A lot of times we get calls from our clients that are at the bank. Mm-hmm. And they'll say, here, can you talk to the person at the bank?
That's
we'll
right.
talk to them and kind of walk through things. And, you know, we're willing to do that for our clients. It happens. And we want to make mm-hmm. sure that they understand what your documents are. We also, I've had some people that really don't understand memorandums of trust, which is a document yeah. that we do when people execute a trust that lists, this is who the grantors are that set up the trust. This mm-hmm. is the name of the trust. These are the trustees, and here's the EIN number. And when they go to the bank and they say, hey, I want to change that CD into the name of my trust, they're like, what's the name of the trust? Well, it's right there on the memorandum right. of trust. We did that kind of as a shortcut so mm-hmm. that the bank doesn't have to have the full copy of the trust because it's really none of their business.
Yes, that's right. But nevertheless, like you said, they get a lot of pushback sometimes at the bank or wherever they're trying to go. Yeah, and those memorandum of trust is meant to make it easier for you.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we'll get calls from the banks, right, about what is this? How do we open up this trust account?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I have the banks not accepting the power of attorney. I mean, this went one step further. This client went in, she showed the power of attorney, and they said, oh, this is not good enough. You need to be appointed guardian for this person. So,
oh, no.
I know, just really crazy out there, you know, what they're coming up with. If you have a power of attorney that's supposed to avoid the guardianship, that make you have to go get one.
Definitely, that's why you do it. So we need some calls. We need some calls at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Jane Marie and I would love to talk to you about estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning. We'd love to talk to you if you want to give us a call. We've had some really interesting estate administration situations here lately, too, where people, I love it when they call and they're like, well, I don't want to be greedy. Okay. That's not how you want to start the conversation because you already told me you are. Right?
So, it's not about the money, but, right.
Exactly. And a lot of people don't understand that a will doesn't have any control over assets that have beneficiaries. So we have people that say, well, the will says that everything goes 50-50 between the two kids, but my sister took the whole IRA. Well, your sister was the beneficiary on the IRA, so therefore she was entitled to it. No, no, no. Mom and Dad wanted everything to go 50-50.
Right, right. There's a, I know clients or people who are contesting it often come in and say, oh, yeah, Mom and Dad said this. I was at a hearing where the brother was there, and he said, well, you know, Mom said she wanted me to be in charge of everything. He was really fighting over who was the executor. Well, she may have said that, but she didn't change her will, you know. So,
right.
So you're kind of out of luck there, you know.
I had a phone call with... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I'm going to jump in then, because if you guys can't decide who's going to talk, then I'm going to jump in. We do have our first caller this morning. We have Mike from Albany.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Good morning, Debbie and Cam Marie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hello?
Yeah, hello. What can we help you with?
Oh, okay. I'm having problems with one of the banks. And, you know, I'm hoping, well, actually, what I want to do also is set up an appointment, being here in Albany. You know, I want to get a lawyer to, you know, go after these, the people, you know, from the bank. They're basically what they're doing is they're holding my money.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've talked to them about it, and they're, you know, they won't release my money.
Is there a reason why they won't release your money? Why are they telling you they won't release your money?
They're saying that they think I'm being scammed.
Oh.
And, which I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
I have plans to get married, and and of course, you know, with bills and things like that, you know, they're just, you know, and it's very frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Well, sure. If you think there's a reason, I mean, why they're holding money back, that's just not valid. We can talk about that. I would say give us a call on Monday.
Okay.
Our office, yeah, it's 518. Where is 418? 518-465-7581.
Okay, hold on. Let me grab. Okay. I tell you, it's so good listening to you, you know. You know, I listen to you every week, so.
Well, good. That's great.
Yeah. Okay. Again, the number?
Sure. It's 518-465-7581.
7581.
Yep. And we're happy to talk to you and see what the issue is with the bank.
Sounds great.
All right.
Again.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Have a great weekend. You know, it's interesting that banks and brokerage houses are actually taking an active role now to make sure that people are not getting taken advantage of. And a lot of the brokers that I speak to, they'll actually have the person sign a document that says that they can contact their kids or they can contact someone else if they see something that's out of the ordinary.
Yeah, I've seen that form, and that is good because a lot of elderly people do get scammed, and it allows them to try and, you know, not try, to actually talk to the kids to make sure, you know, see if this is legitimate or not, or if they are being scammed, to have the power of attorney step in and try and talk to their parents.
We did that. We had a presentation. One of our webinars was on COVID scams. Because there's a lot of new ones now that people are isolated. And because someone's isolated, they're, you know, they're good pickings for people that are going to take advantage of them.
Yeah, that's right. There's always new scams. You know, there's always the old favorites, like the grandchild who was in jail, that one.
Mm-hmm.
That's an awful one. I still can't believe how people believe that when it's not even their own grandchild calling, but it happens, right?
Well, it happened to my parents. It happened to my parents years ago when Zach was in college. We were down in Florida, and so was Zach. And I got a call from my mom, and she said, "Do you know where Zach is?" And I went, "In Florida?" And she goes, "No, we just got a call, and he said that somebody had passed away, and he had gone to Mexico, that he was in Mexico with his friend, and that basically he rode back to the airport, was on the way back to the airport with this person, and they got busted for drugs, and he was in jail, and they wanted them to wire money and everything like that." And they had my parents are intelligent people. You know what I mean? But, you know, what they do is whenever they call, they say, "We have your grandson here and he's in jail. Would you like to talk to him?" And they're so distraught. And they're like, "Zach, is that you?" And it's like, "Yes, Grandma, it's me, Zach," you know?
Right. And they just panic, right? And they just believe it. Right.
And so I had to keep calling and calling and calling his cell phone because he was on spring break, needless to say, so he wasn't answering his cell phone. So finally he answered. He's like, "What?" And I'm like, "Call your grandmother and tell her you're fine."
Right. Tell her you're not in jail in Mexico for you. I know, but those scams are pretty popular, and they do work a lot of the time. During COVID, there's a whole bunch of them that were on, you know, just how to get, masks or gloves or equipment, you know, that Medicare will pay for it. So you need to give us your information for Medicare so we can bill them. And then they get your information and then they can make false claims against your insurance company. So it's never a good idea to give out anything like your insurance info or your Social Security to someone over the phone.
Right, or they call you and they say, "This is your credit card company. We're not calling to collect anything. You know, you're not past due or anything, but we need to talk to you about your credit card." And so you're like, "Hello?" And they're like, "Yeah, we need your credit card company." Well, a number. "Well, you called me. Obviously, you have it. Well, give me your social so I can look it up." "Hello, right. If you called me, you should have that information."
Well, that's right. That is something to remember. But you got tricked and you give that information away. So a lot of times, like, clients will have an older parent like this and they're a little bit worried that they may be getting scammed, but the parent is still able to kind of take care of things on their own. So I suggest see if you're parent will let you become joint on the bank account with them. Then you can look at the transactions and see what's going on. You don't have to manage it, but you can just kind of oversee it. Or you could do that using your power of attorney. So if you do see something going on, you can kind of call them or put a stop to it.
Yeah, a power of attorney sometimes becomes a problem too. I had a client in yesterday that named her two kids as co-powers of attorney. So it was son and daughter. And apparently the one child was trying to do stuff for mom and the other child wouldn't sign off.
Yes.
Right? So they were butting heads.
Yeah. That's a problem when you have two on the power of attorney. You have to be very clear whether they have to act together or whether they can act separately.
Right, because if they have to act together and neither one of them won't sign off, then it's guardianship is your next step, right? Because there's no one that can act for you because they're stalemated.
That's right. They're at a standstill. They can't do anything. So you can go for a guardianship and ask for someone else to be appointed, right?
Yeah, it's not easy. But the more you plan ahead and the more you think these things through, the better off you are. And a lot of things that are changing is, you know, a lot of people are Florida residents, and they live in Florida as a resident, and then they come to New York, and they live in New York part of the year, and they live in Florida part of the year. And now all of a sudden, with all the COVID restrictions and everything that's going on, they may not get that 6 months and one day in Florida to be a Florida resident, and then that causes all kinds of estate tax ramifications.
Yeah, that's right. There's lots of restrictions going on the travel, so some people aren't able to do their usual schedule like they want to, and because of quarantining and everything. But that also reminded me, if you're going back and forth between Florida and New York, sometimes we recommend that you have a power of attorney for each state. Because even though your New York one is valid in Florida or your Florida one is valid in New York, because of all the problems we have with banks, it's easier to use the form for the state that you're in. So you can have two powers of attorney and say that they're each valid.
As long as the one doesn't revoke the other one.
Right, you have to make sure of that, right.
There is language.
That's right.
So we'd love to get, well, I don't know if we can get another caller in before the end of the first half hour, but the phone number here is 518-476-5900. Again, that's 518-476-5900. And if we can't squeeze you in this half hour, we can have plenty of time for you to call in the second half hour. Right, Ben?
That is absolutely correct.
And you have to help us out here. We have to show that the girls get more calls than the boys. And
That's true.
We're going to get lots of calls in the second half hour.
Exactly. And again, the phone number to call in is 518-476-5900. And Ben will put you on the radio. Or, you know, sometimes people just call in and ask Ben questions because they don't want their voice recognized on the radio. I always think that's funny.
That's funny, right. And then Ben has to ask us the question.
Yeah.
Which is fine. That works also. If you're a little bit shy.
Yeah, that works. Yeah, don't be shy. Call up and ask us questions. And we would love to help you out. And as Jamie said before, if it's something that you feel like you need to make an appointment, you can give us a call at the office at 518-465-7581. Oh, my gosh. It's still early, right?
We're both picking up the phone number today, really.
Maybe we should let Ben do that from now on.
Yeah, Ben must know our phone number.
You know, we can take our break just a little bit early if we want. It's about a minute before 8:30, so let's go to our break right now. We'll be back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010. And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Hello, this is Debbie Verney.
And this is Jane Marie Schaefer.
And we're back for the second half hour of the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour. And we would love to have your questions on estate planning, estate administration, and Medicaid planning. The phone number here at the radio is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. And one of the things we're going to talk about now, and which a lot of people have a lot of interest in, is the changes to community Medicaid.
That's right. Community Medicaid is a really great program where you can get care at home instead of going into an institution. And up until now, it's been pretty easy to plan for community Medicaid because you have to, you know, have your assets down to a certain level to be eligible. So you can transfer those assets, or, well, I should say you used to be able to transfer those assets and then be eligible for Medicaid the following month. But the law changed this year. Actually, it changed on October 1st. And going forward, there's going to be a look-back period for community Medicaid. just like there is for nursing home Medicaid. And it's going to be a 2.5-year look-back period. So people need to plan in advance, no more last-minute planning. I mean, you really have to think about, is this something I'm going to want to potentially use down the road, and how can I plan for it? Should I set up a trust now? And I usually get the question of, when should I do this trust, or when should I think about this planning? What do you think about that, Debbie, when people should start doing the planning?
Well, when it's interesting because people are like, I'm too young to have a trust, or I'm too old to have a trust. So it's like, what's the perfect age? And I always say, when you're thinking about protecting your assets, or you're thinking about retiring and you're trying to preserve your assets, should something happen to you, that's probably a perfect time. I've got a lot of people that do it when they're younger, because whenever something happens to their parents, whether they end up in a nursing home or they end up passing away, and they come in and we're like, well, this is what we need to do. And they're like, that's it? I'm like, yeah, that's it. And they're like, okay, so sign me up for whatever they had. So it's like, whatever they had, just duplicate that for me, because I want it to be as seamless for my family as it was for us.
Hi, Debbie. J. Marie.
Yeah.
We have another caller. We have Anne from Colony.
Good morning, Anne.
Oh, good morning. I have, could you address the fact that there are a whole bunch of us out here are basically totally alone, because our families were very small, aging. Even our nieces and nephews are either older or out of the area. What we can plan to do, and I really can't stay on the phone, but if you could address this.
Sure. So I think we do have clients in that situation. Kind of just really need to think about who could take over. There's really the two roles, right? One is bill paying, which is the power of attorney. And one is the healthcare proxy, which is medical decisions. And for the power of attorney, if you don't really have any close family by, that may be easier to find someone else who could do that for you. I know there are professionals or people you can hire to do the bill paying as you get older. So that may be an option for you. You could kind of get that set up in advance. It's a tough thing. You really have to talk to people and see who could be willing to help you out in that situation. I mean, the other thing is you have to think about where you live, right, as you get older, so to plan for things that change down the road, right? If you're alone in an apartment, maybe that's not such a great option. Maybe you need to be someplace where someone could check on you, or, bring you meal, bring you groceries, bring you medications. That's what I would be thinking of looking at.
It's hard to find somebody. I always say to people, because they're like, I don't have anybody. And I said, okay, so something happens to you, your car breaks down, right? Okay. Other than the auto club, right?
Well,
who are you going to call? Right. AAA cannot be your healthcare proxy or power of attorney. But if you, if you locked yourself out of the house, who are you going to call? Right? If something happened and your car broke down and you needed a ride someplace, who are you going to call? Mm-hmm. And it may not be the person that you would want to appoint as healthcare proxy or power of attorney, but the people that are closest to us, you really need to talk to them. Yeah, especially talk to them before you name them.
Yeah.
Right? You need to make sure that someone is going to follow your wishes. It was interesting. Kim Hans, who's our geriatric care manager, before she came to work with us, she said she and her husband were sitting there doing their estate planning documents, and she was talking about her health care proxy, and she was saying, well, if this happens, then I want this, and if this happens, then I want that. And she said she saw her husband totally go white, and she looked at him and said, what's wrong? And he's like, I don't think I could do that. I mean, this is her husband. And she goes, okay, then you can't be my person. Right? So it's very simple. You need to make sure that the person is going to do what you want them to do as far as healthcare decisions and as far as power of attorney. When people come in that do have kids, they're like, well, this one's the oldest, they get power of attorney. This one's the next oldest, they get healthcare proxy. This one's the next oldest, they can be executor. That's not how you choose the people that you want to appoint in documents. You need to make sure number one, that they're willing to act for you. And when I talk about people for power of attorney or an executor, I'm like, can they balance a checkbook? I mean, I know no one physically balances their checkbook anymore, but you have to have some kind of number sense to be able to serve in those capacities.
Yeah, absolutely. You need to pick the person who is best for the job, and it's not necessarily, like you said, your children in age order, right? Or it may not even be your child. If you have kids, sometimes you still are picking, your brother or your sister or a nephew or who's maybe in the financial business. You really have to look at all the people around you and see who's the best person suited for that job. If you have someone who's in the healthcare field, usually people make them the healthcare proxy.
Right, that's true. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying that person probably gets appointed a lot by family members, but that's usually who you're going to go to.
Definitely, and the person for power of attorney, it's interesting. I had a lady call yesterday who's one of my clients, and she's like, I need to take this person off of all of my documents. It was one of her siblings. And I said, why? She goes, because they don't even talk to me anymore. And she had just done her documents like 5 years ago. And she says, we've totally become estranged. And if they called her from the hospital, she wouldn't answer the phone.
Right.
So you need to take your documents out if you already have documents, dust them off, and look at who you've got appointed for things. Because number one, they may have passed away. Number two, they may have moved away. And number three, you may not have a relationship with them anymore.
Right. That's why you need to just check them every couple of years to make sure they're up to date. A lot of our clients have documents when their children were little. So the children weren't in these roles as healthcare proxy and power of attorney. But now that they're grown up, it could be time to, change your documents and put them in. That happens a lot to us. So that is one. That's why you have to look at these carefully.
And if you are someone that doesn't have any family around, you should talk to your friends. And the only document that can't be co is your healthcare proxy. So if you have a couple of friends and you're like, well, one's okay with money, but the other one's always there for me, maybe you make them co. So there's checks and balances, right? So that there's two of them that have to do something. And the healthcare proxy is the only one that can't be co. That one has to be a pecking order, so you have to pick someone to be number one, and then if they can't get a hold of them, they're going to go to number two. It doesn't mean that they can't make the decision together. It just means that the doctors are going to look to that person first.
Debbie, J. Marie.
Yes.
We have another caller. We have Lewis in Albany.
Good morning, Lewis.
Good morning. I just wanted to move you up a notch on the race here, that's all.
Oh, great. Thank you.
No, really is, I know when you got to go for Medicare, you got to show 5 years of documents. So that's all you would need? Could you throw the rest in the shredder, or should you keep them too?
That's a good question. In terms of keeping financial records, I think 6 years is the standard because that's as far back as the IRS could do an audit for a tax return. But, yeah, past that, you don't have to keep the old ones,
Yeah, so in other words, all the ones I got from back to 2005, I can dump them.
Exactly.
That's right. You can make some room in your filing cabinet there.
Well, that's why I was calling. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm glad
he called.
Yes. Right, because some people, I know when we apply for Medicaid, the children are putting together financial records, and they're like, oh, wow, mom and dad have everything from, 1970 forward, right? And you don't necessarily need all those financial records. The only things you have to keep are important things, relating to your house, I don't know, any major purchase like that, but the rest of it you can get rid of.
Right, you don't need all your canceled checks and your bank statements past 6 years.
That's right. But there's a lot of clients who don't keep any records, and that's fine also because if you need to apply for Medicaid, we can write to the bank and get those records for you. So not to worry, not everyone is a good record keeper.
Yeah, most banks, because they're like, oh, well, we'll just get it online. Well, most banks only keep 1 to 2 years of statements online, if that many. So you're actually going to have to contact the bank to get 5 years worth of records. And what he was talking about is whenever a person is applying for Medicaid to pay for their care, if they're going into a nursing home, you have to have 5 years worth of records, checking, savings, CDs, IRAs, 401Ks. And what they're looking for is any transfers. They don't care if you spend your money. They just don't want you to give it away.
Right, which is always a little bit crazy to me. So you could go on some fancy vacations, buy some fancy cars. They're okay. That doesn't really matter. But if you give your child more than $2,000, if you gave them $2,500, that check is going to count against you. They're going to count that as a gift to your child and penalize you for it.
Another question I get from people is, well, how do they know? How do they know I didn't spend it? Well, if you can't prove that you spent it, then they assume that you gave it away. And they're like, well, what if I go to the casino, right? What if I go to the casino and I just blow it at the casino? And I'm like, well, make sure you have your frequent gambler's card and wave at the camera when you walk in so that you have evidence that you blew your money.
That's right. I mean, yeah, they're going to look. Cash withdrawals are hard, but checks, they're going to ask for copies of the checks so they can see where they went to. So that's a pretty easy giveaway.
Yeah, or they'll ask for receipts. You know, what's this $5,000 check for? Oh, that's where I got the roof patched. Okay, do you have a copy of the check or a copy of the receipt from the person who patched your roof?
Mm-hmm.
So keeping 5 to 6 years worth of records, it makes sense, and if you don't, then we can kind of always reconstruct it. It's kind of like when someone passes away and we have to do estate administration, we always ask for the tax returns. And people are like, why do you need the person's tax returns? Because we can look at them and figure out where the accounts were from the 1099s and where the income was coming from and kind of do some forensic accounting.
Yes, that's often how we have to find things because not everyone, you know, organizes their information for their children. Some people just don't do that, and you know, people don't have any idea where the accounts are. So that is one easy way to look for things is through the tax return. We also always, this is just a little bonus, when you check unclaimed funds. You ever checked unclaimed funds on the New York State website? I check for myself, and I never find anything.
I found a check for Zach one time, my son. I was on there, and I thought, let me check everybody's names, and I found one. It was a job that he had, and he left it abruptly, as it were, and it was his last paycheck. They had turned it over to unclaimed funds, so he had, like, $60 more than he knew he had. He's like, woohoo, found money.
That's right. That's funny. But sometimes when people are getting older and they have dementia, they're not taking care of certain things. So I've seen for some of our clients, you know, large bank accounts go to unclaimed funds. So it is possible to get a lot of money there, you know, especially if you think your, you know, parent or whoever wasn't managing the finances very well.
Right, or people move. People move and then checks go to them for refunds for utilities that you disconnected and stuff like that. So I had an interesting, speaking of utilities, I had an interesting situation where the client was on a plan where they pay the same amount every month. And then she apparently sold her, she was elderly, she sold her house and she moved into senior living. And she passed away, and whenever she passed away, I was looking at her bank statements, and I'm like, why does she have a utility bill? Because she lived in senior living where it's covered. They had never stopped billing her, and she just never noticed it. So like $200 a month was coming out of her account for over a year after she didn't own her house anymore.
That's awful. That, yeah. I guess the company didn't know if she didn't tell them that she moved, but that's pretty awful that that's still going on. Right.
I know. But, you know, they refunded it, which was fine, but it's just, and the thing is, they had changed the utilities over to the new owner's name, but they'd never discontinued the monthly budgeting plan that she had. Kind of funky, huh?
Yeah, that's so funky. Well, that's things that you can check on if you're coming back to powers of attorney again, right?
And that's it.
right? If you're a power of attorney and you need to help your parent out with the bills, you can look over that and see if there's something that they missed, right? Because if you were the kid and you were trying to call that utility company to take care of that and you didn't have a power of attorney, they're not going to talk to you, or they're going to ask you to put mom on the phone, you know, and give her permission to talk to you. So it's easier to have the power of attorney.
It is a lot easier to have it. That way they can talk to you. Once they get it on file, mm-hmm. then you can get all the information that you need.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You don't have to pretend to be your mother, although I'm not going to advocate doing that.
Not that we've never done that.
No. Until I get to something like, you know, I don't know, city where you were born or some question. Well, no, you should know that, but there's usually a question that you don't know.
Yeah, definitely. Or, we're not even going to go there. You know, what's your secret? What was your best friend's first name? And you're like, oh, my gosh. That one I don't know. But it is better to have your documents in place, and it's a lot easier for your kids, too. And it's hard to give up information to your kids. I mean, I know that. I understand that. I had people in this week that she came in with her parents, and she's like, I have no idea. And she was with her parents, so it's not like she's calling me going, I have no idea what they're doing. I have no idea where their money is. She was like, I have no clue. They're sitting there at the table. She's like, I don't have any idea where their accounts are. I don't have any idea who the beneficiaries are. I don't have any idea what their documents say. They've kept everything very secret. Mm-hmm. And even though they had stuff in place, right, mm-hmm. now they're aging out. And she's, like, worried. She's like, I'm scared. And her parents were sitting there, and she's like, what can we do? And her parents were still like, well, you know where our bank accounts are. And she's like, no, I don't.
Right.
So you need to make it easy for your family. You don't have to divulge every penny that you have, but if you tell them, all my bank accounts are here or there, that at least helps.
Debbie, Jay Marie.
Yes.
We have another caller. It's Mary from Albany.
Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. We were talking the other night, and my brother was thinking about buying a new car. I know this may not be up your alley, but I was wondering, when somebody does that, is it a bad idea to put whoever you'd like to have your car name on the title or not?
Well, in terms of passing it on, I mean, that is a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if something happened to one of you, then it would go to the other person automatically rather than having to go to probate for that, for a car. So that's probably a good idea in those terms, right?
Because sometimes you would just put their name on the title with yours, and nothing would be held against them or you if anything happened in their business, right?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, I would want to talk to my insurance person, right? Mm-hmm. I would want to talk to my insurance person for my car to see exactly how that would work. Because I'm thinking if you're a joint owner on the car and someone has a really, really bad accident and they sue you for above what the policy is, I would think if your name's on that car that they could sue you.
That's what he said, too. And I thought, gee, I wondered because I thought, you know, you make out your will or whatever, but, you know, you get a new car and maybe you'd like to leave it to somebody else. So, okay, well, thank you.
You're welcome. That's a great question.
That is a good question because there's many different aspects of that, but, right? The liability question is important.
Well, you can transfer one car without going through probate.
You can, right. But a lot of times people have more than one car. I mean, sometimes we're going to probate, even if it's a small estate, just for some vehicles.
Yeah. Well, the vehicle has to be under what amount that you don't have to probate it?
So that's a good question, because it used to be $30,000, but they raised the small estate limit to $50,000.
Right. So I would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, so if everything you have is under $50,000, it's a small estate, which is a much easier process than a full probate petition.
Right. The cars are kind of tricky. Like you said, most people have more than one car.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be, like I said, I would only be worried about the liability of having my name on that car, because we were talking in a meeting I was in yesterday, And they said, you know, kind of like a car accident, they were talking about insurance, and they said, so if there's more than one car that's involved in an accident, what does someone do? And I'm like, they sue everybody, right?
Right.
So, you know, if you sue everybody, then hopefully you're going to get something. So right. I was thinking, if you've got two names on the car, even if you weren't driving it and they insured it and mm-hmm. they sued for over the policy, I think you would be personally liable.
Yes, I think it would go back to whoever the owner is.
Debbie, so Jay Marie. Oh, I'm sorry, yeah. Jay Marie. I did not mean to step all over you. I thought you had stopped. I apologize. We do have a caller. It's Marilyn from Albany.
Good morning, Marilyn.
Yes, good morning. I have a tax question. I don't know whether you can handle it or not. My daughter went into a nursing home in 2018. I'm a little nervous. Anyway, I got a letter from the IRS, and I did her taxes in 18. I did her taxes in 19. Two different people did it. But anyway, the IRS sent me a letter that she owes over $9,000 from 2018. And I'm wondering, you know, how I can handle this. Is this something that your firm can handle?
Well, I mean, we don't do tax returns, but we could work with you know, to get a CPA to handle this. But in terms of having authority to handle her,
I was made power of attorney on her on her estate. But when I went to get a document from the federal building, they said that my power of attorney didn't apply. That you have to have power of attorney through the federal people. Which surprised me. They have a booklet, and it's in there that your power of attorney that you have, which I got, didn't apply. I couldn't get anything from them. I needed something for her tax records, and they wouldn't. It didn't apply. So, I mean, I need to get some of this straightened out. I mean, I certainly don't have that amount of money to pay them. There isn't that amount of money in the account.
Right.
Evidently, the taxes missed something about dividends. That's the only thing I can see. But I just wonder whether you handle that or do I have to get a tax attorney?
You need maybe not a tax attorney or a CPA to do an amended tax return. But we also need to make sure you can take care of things for her with the IRS. So if you want, I would give our office a call on Monday.
Okay, your number there, please.
Sure, it's 518-465-7581.
Okay, thank you so much. You've been a big help.
Well, you're welcome.
Thanks for calling.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Taxes are a difficult thing, and it kind of goes hand in hand with your estate planning, and we can look at the tax returns and kind of give you an idea of what you should do, and then we should also refer her out to a CPA that deals with that kind of stuff, because it may be something that's a very, very simple.
Right. It may be a simple fix where it's just an amendment to the tax return, or if it's something more complicated, you're right. We need to look at that and see, but also to make sure that her power of attorney lets her handle things with the IRS.
Right, because that's one of the things for tax matters right there on the power of attorney. So she may have one of the really, really old ones that don't give her that ability.
Yeah, that's right. So that's important to make sure that can be done. It's not, you know, do you have to do a guardianship? And would you really want to do that just for the taxes? So there's a bunch of questions to answer that we can't get into right now.
Right. I mean, and if she's in a nursing home on Medicaid, she's not going to have any money to pay the taxes. And this kind of goes back to the situation where bill collectors will call the person who's the executor of an estate, or they'll call the person that's the survivor and say, you need to pay this bill. and it's the bill of a decedent or a bill of someone in the nursing home, and you're not personally responsible to pay that person's bill, and they try to kind of bully you into paying the bill. I've had people that have gotten calls after their loved one passed away, and they're like, well, we know you don't owe this $10,000 on your mom's credit card bill, but wouldn't she have wanted you to pay off her credit card?
It's terrible. Some people do get persuaded to do that, and just because you're named the executor doesn't mean you have to pay anything out of your own pocket, right? You only have to use that, the, you know, I'm talking like a lawyer, the decedent, you know.
Exactly.
Because you have to use their money, right, to pay any bills that they have left. And if they have more bills than they have money, then all the creditors don't get paid, and you don't have to pay the difference, right? The creditors are out of luck.
So that's the things that people should call us about. Those are the things that people should come in and talk to us before they do something. And, you know, better safe than sorry, right?
Right. It's always good to to check it out before you do something ahead of time. Right. Especially if you're paying money out of your own pocket. You want to make sure that you're doing the right thing. I mean, there's a lot of clients. We got calls where, let's say, your parents had everything in a trust, right? And they had a bank account that was in joint name. So there is no probate. There's no estate because of that. That means there's no available assets to pay any creditors. So right. You don't have to pay off the creditors. And they're like, really? We don't have to pay anything? Like, no, there's no estate. There's nothing in the estate to pay them. So that's shocking to a lot of people, but it's really, that's the way it works.
Right. The goal is always, I always tell people, I'm like, our goal is everything's joint, has a beneficiary, or it's in a trust. And then you don't have to worry about anything when someone passes away, because everything just passes as a matter of law. That's our legal term for the day. It goes as a matter of law. And that way you don't have to go through the courts.
Yeah, we can help you avoid probate pretty easily. I mean, we're not trying to have you go into court if you don't have to. That's why it's a good idea to come see us and get some advice.
So you guys have a great weekend. Hopefully you enjoy all the virtual walks, and we'll talk to you next week.
Have a good week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.